Hello, six pack of confidence. Been so many nights since we first met. Glad to see you brought all your friends for another night of Plastic Cup Politics.
Hello, friends and neighbors. Thanks for pressing play on a new episode of Plastic Cup Politics Podcast. I'm your host, Mark LaRue. He is Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD. That PhD is in political science. Kind of why we do this podcast. I have questions. He paid a lot of money to have answers. This is an Arizona-based drinking and politics podcast. You can interact with the show at Plastic Cup Pod. However you're listening to this, go ahead and hit subscribe. It's the right thing to do. We're going to rush right into this. Allegedly, this is going to be a quick one. We'll see. And sometimes it works out that way. I will say, Dr. Sean Hayes, in one room away, how you doing and what are you having? Actually, you know what? You just tell me how you're doing. I'll explain what you're having because I know what you're having. We're having the same thing.
Yeah. And personally, I'm doing well. I am concerned, of course, which is why we're doing another one tonight.
There you go. What Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, is drinking is from a brand new brewery here in Arizona. It is a Belgian Trappel from Greenwood Brewing, which just opened up at 5th Street and Roosevelt in the heart of downtown Phoenix. They opened up on Saturday, and I decided to drop by and see what they were all about. It is a woman-owned, woman-brewed brewery, which is pretty gosh darn rad. It's a really beautiful place right there at 5th and Roosevelt. So I went and had a flight. I'm not an IPA guy, but they had a rosemary IPA that was really well balanced. Like, it kind of the earthiness of the rosemary kind of balanced out well against the hop profile. It was definitely an IPA, but worked out pretty gosh darn well. But of course, I'm a Belgian guy, so I had to grab a growler of the Belgian Trappel. So that's what we're drinking. And how's it hitting you, Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD?
It's darn tasty. It's going to sound a tiny bit sexist, but I swear to God, I had this opinion before I knew that it was a female-owned and operated business. It has, not that these things have to be inherently associated with women or whatever, but it has, like, again, sort of a fruity profile to it. I think I said this about the last Belgian Trappel I had, too. I was comparing it to Hoegaarden. This one isn't as floral,
right,
but it's definitely fruity.
Yeah, that's your Belgian yeast. Gives you those esters. Yeah, using brewery words, esters.
it's almost closer to a sparkling wine than a beer, to be honest.
I will disagree, but hey, that's the great thing about
almost. It's right. Still very clearly a beer. Like, when you open the growler and get a hoof of it, it's very obviously a beer. But when you're drinking it, you could drink it in some of the same contexts where you would drink a sparkling wine.
There you go.
It's not heavy at all, but it does seem like it packs a punch.
Well, it's a Belgian triple, so it does. It's actually not as high alcohol as some are. I think it's only, I think it's under 7%, which is a little light for a trip, but it definitely has all the flavor character that I look for in a Belgian.
I like it.
So that's what we're drinking, and I have an excellent segue into, since I moved down to Phoenix, all I want to do is go record shopping. That's all I want to do. Not having a job or any money affects my record shopping. But what also affects my record shopping is COVID. It's, you know, like plowing through records and touching a bunch of stuff that you know a bunch of other people have touched. And, you know, like when you're looking through records, it's not always very well socially distanced. I live real near Stinkweeds on Central. And
I was going to ask you about that. Isn't it by appointment only right now?
Yes, it was super rad. I went on Tuesday. I will let you know we are recording on June 22nd. So on Tuesday, I went in there just because I saw that that's what they were doing, and they had an appointment. And you set your appointment online, and they take a $10 deposit. When you go there, you have a $10 credit. If you don't find anything worth $10, if you like a record store, in a record store, you're definitely going to find something that you will spend $10 on. But so I was there. I got there at 1 o'clock. I was the only one there other than the clerk. I had the entire record store to myself to peruse. And it was one of those things where you're like, I don't know if I'm going to, you know, like an hour seems, or sorry, you only get 45 minutes because they have to get ready for the next person. and my Fitbit went off 10 minutes of the hour. And I'm like, oh, geez, I have been in here for 15 minutes. I guess I do need to get up and get out. And they're like, yeah, and they were booked up for the day. So like, didn't have anybody behind you, we would let you stay. But as I left, I saw her go out and wipe down the door handles from where I left. Like, it felt really good. It was like, oh, nice. Man, I have no guilt in going record shopping. And I picked up a Nitro record and, Out Fucking Rages. Freight Train on there.
What's hilarious is like, for audiophiles like you, and my wife for that matter, that sounds like a luxury package that someone would buy you.
Dude,
right? Like, pop a couple $100 to rent a record store for a couple of hours for someone you love and send them in there so that they can just all the records to themselves.
I'm pretty sure that's how Dave Grohl goes record shopping. So anyway, there's a nice little segue into COVID talk. What do you got, Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD?
Shit's bad out there, man. We just hit, as a total for the country, we just hit our highest daily death toll since April, when it was sort of the peak of things in the northeastern United States. Daily new infections are creeping up towards the 100,000 a day mark, which is what I was saying a couple weeks ago is real, real bad news if we hit that. And it has, I'll hold off on that for a second, because that's diving into sort of partisan politics. And I just want to stick with the virus for just a few moments more. It doesn't show any signs of decelerating right now, which is frightening. And it's starting to sort of, like, the Northeast seems to be doing okay at the moment. Like, it's not creeping back in that direction, but it is creeping back up the western coast of the United States, where they have plenty of other problems to deal with right now as well. So it's the virus itself is still wildly out of control here in the United States. We are essentially at step zero in terms of containing the coronavirus at this point.
Which is really a bummer, because that's what I've been seeing recently from, that's how I get my pulse of the world, is from Facebook. And yeah, but... seeing people that are now just saying, well, this is what it is, and you're going to get it or you're not, and just go on with your life. And it's like, it never had to be this way. Look at all the countries where it's not this way. Like, why are we settling for this is just the way that it is now, and we just need to go on? And if he dies.
Look, and not only did it not have to be this way, but even the way that it is isn't necessarily going to go on forever, right? So right now, assuming they can demonstrate both safety and efficacy, so they have proved that it's safe for human beings to take within a certain margin of safety, right? Like with all drugs, there may be side effects. As long as the side effects are minimal enough and sparsely distributed enough, they go ahead and they push the drug out.
I'm one of the people, I'm like, put me first in line. I'll lab test this virus, or I know I'm probably not in the majority here, but yeah, I'll give it a shot. I believe in science. I'll be the first one to sign me up to get the vaccine.
Well, so the deal that they signed today was for $2 billion to Pfizer and a small German pharma company that I think is focused on vaccines, as opposed to Pfizer overall, which does lots and lots of things. And so it's $2 billion if they can demonstrate efficacy and safety, which is still a big if, right? Like, they're just getting ready to start stage 3 clinical trials. It's not... things are just starting to get interesting in terms of testing it. So this is by no means a guarantee, but it's indicative of the progress that we can make when we start to take it a tiny bit seriously. Right. And so if all of the planets align, and we can get this vaccine. I mean, that's 100 million doses by December is what the contract spells out. And that's not, you know, they're not going to be starting to make those doses tomorrow, right? They probably won't actually finish demonstrating efficacy and safety until probably October. So you're actually talking about, you know, a month and a half, 2 months to produce 100 million doses, which which will be distributed to the public for free. But of course, it's going to be, you know, first responders will get inoculated first, the ones that haven't already had it, right? And then high risk populations, blah 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 blah. Tragically, yeah, it does mean that even after what looks like his inevitable defeat, Dumpster Fire will be one of the first people to get a vaccine. Let's just all cross our fingers that he's too stupid to take it, that he's secretly an anti-vaxxer, and he'll say no.
I'm not even sure he's secretly an anti-vaxxer.
That's a good point. With those numbers, we could look at, you know, potentially total inoculation of the U.S. population by the middle of next year. Or inoculation to a high enough extent that we have replicated herd immunity. That's not that long, right? I mean, let's take a step back for just a second and think about the hardships that some of our predecessors in the United States have endured, right? Not for a year, but for many years, or in some instances, decades, right? I think we can pull off another, you know, 10 to 12 months of having to wear a mask when we going out as infrequently as possible, avoiding gatherings of 10 people or more, right? These are not tremendous, like, these are not horrible, horrible impositions. There are ways that that you could live very comfortably within those boundaries, right? We've even started to see, in our friend group, people have started to very cautiously socialize a little bit, but always essentially with the same people and always in small groups, right? They're doing it the smart way. Life will adjust. It won't be this way forever. And even during the time that it is, we can make it absolutely bearable if people will just fucking cooperate. Right? So it didn't have to be the way that it is now, and it's not going to be this way forever. So people need to calm the fuck down about, like, you know, the sacrifice they're being asked to make, right? Or the tyranny that they're being subjected to.
Dr. Sean Hayes is just asking for everyone to mellow out in a very passionately way.
Chill the fuck out.
No. They need to chill the fuck out about one very specific thing, man. There's other shit that we absolutely need to be excited about. But one thing we don't need to be excited about is the burden of having to wear a goddamn mask when we go out in public.
It really is positive news on a podcast where you don't always have positive news. Like, this is not the new normal. Like, I think that that's kind of something that people are trying to adjust to. And that's why I disagree with the people that are just like, well, we need to get the economy going open, get back open. And if you fucking die, you die. Like, no, we can do this. We can do this and not have a bunch of people die.
There was an excellent article that I read today. That was explaining how, in very simple terms, right, how not only can we do both, but taking all of the necessary measures to remain safe is how we get the economy back open, right? Because it doesn't matter how many laws Republican sycophants pass ordering schools and businesses to reopen. If people are still terrified that they will get sick, or their relatives, they will then sicken their relatives and kill them, right? Their older relatives or their immune-compromised relatives. Everybody knows someone who is in a high-risk category, right? We all know several people who are in high-risk groups, and our friend group has already lost a person to all of this who was in some of those groups, right? So as long as there is that fear there, you can reopen all the businesses you want. People, the economy still isn't going to reopen because no one is going out and doing anything. No one is going out and spending money under these circumstances. There were some people who ran out and did it to make a point. There were some, and then you have this is the thing, right? This is why you have to close certain categories of business, because for like a month, it held true that like the people that were out there, you know, going to restaurants and all this other horse shit were the people who wanted to make a point about it. And then, well, because young people are stupid, they got in on the action. And that is in part what sort of lit the fire under the virus to cause it to explode the way that it did.
I mean, we were young once. We remember being young, 10 feet tall and bulletproof, and nothing was ever going to happen to you. But you're not always bulletproof.
Yeah. Well, and you know, in their defense, right, the people that they are supposed to be taking their cues from in terms of safety, and I'm not just talking about the government, but I'm also talking about the other adults in their lives, were sending them incredibly confusing messages about what they should be doing right now. You get an insurance discount at age 25 because that's the age at which your brain finally stops developing.
Exactly. That's. I was hoping you were going to get to that point. Yeah. Your brain's done at 25. So
yeah.
Everything and before that is a little squishy.
Yeah, exactly. But look, that doesn't mean that people who are in their 20s are worthless or inherently bad or any of that stuff. It just means that like they're not entirely past that teenage phase where you can be very, very smart and do incredibly stupid things.
They're still a work in progress.
The adults around them did an incredibly piss poor job of providing the signals that they very badly needed in order to make the right call. There's blame to go around everywhere, right? We all fucked ourselves. Now we need to get on with fucking dealing with it. And at least, to his credit, to his pea-brained, orange-tinted, shit-stained credit, he has at least recognized, he being dumb, has at least recognized that his response to the coronavirus has badly damaged his prospects of being reelected. And so at least for the last 24 hours, we have seen him say and do the things he should have said and done back in February.
You can't hear me silently nodding, but it's yeah. happening. It's happening.
Yeah, so he said it was patriotic to wear a mask, and he held a 30-minute press conference about the virus and actually pretty consistently stayed with talking about the virus and talked about it in very dramatic terms, saying it was going to get worse before it got better and that, you know, things were really bad and we needed to take some dramatic steps to fix them. He didn't go on to then do any of those things. That may still be a little too much to hope for from this president, but he is at least saying that. And that means that some of his less committed supporters might also start saying that's a step in the right direction.
We saw Ducey say it before he did. There's your patriotic duty to wear a mask. So Here's the thing. When the president in late July says it's going to get worse before it gets better, he could have said the same thing in early March, and guess what? We would be on the getting better end of this. It was his pause and lack of leadership what led us to this point, months after the rest of the world, where now we understand it's going to get worse before it gets better. We could have been on the better side of things. That's the issue.
Yeah.
But everybody else, all you mouth breathers, wear a mask. Don't wear them in your car because, as one of my friends put something up that I agreed with completely, if I see you in your car and you're wearing a mask, I'm assuming so you don't lick the windows.
All right. So look, the thing that's important to make note of here, though, just based on the very last couple of things that you said, those other parts of the world are not out of the woods yet.
No.
There are also other areas of the world that are doing almost as badly as we are and are getting worse, Brazil being one of them. Gee, huge surprise that all of the worst hit countries, with the exception of China, it scares me to even say it because it puts ideas in people's heads, but China is an actual autocracy. And so it was able to use the the extreme powers of state, right, force to quickly snuff out the virus in China. There are still places where it flares up big enough that even the communist government has to admit to it, which means there's still a smoldering bed of infection going on in China right now. It's just not big enough to be reported about, right? But nevertheless, so the thing that's scary to say, right, is that all of these other countries that are also doing incredibly badly are also led by authoritarian figures. Those authoritarians just haven't actually reached the point of being true, like, autocracies yet. That's the crazy part, right, is that these people aren't necessarily... So, like, for example, Donald Trump is a fucking moron, but he's not actually stupid enough to believe most of what he says about the coronavirus. Jair Bolsonaro down in Brazil, again, a fucking retard, not dumb enough to believe most of what he says about the coronavirus.
But, I mean, at least his money is where his mouth is because he got the coronavirus.
He did get the coronavirus. That is true.
True believer.
Well, he kind of backed himself into a corner on that one, right? But so, and by the way, I'm not in Brazil. Maybe he really is fucking dumb enough to believe all these things, but it doesn't seem that way. It looks like he's doing the same thing that Trump is doing here, that we've seen other budding dictators do in other countries during this crisis. He is using this as an opportunity to further destabilize established structures of knowledge and information dissemination. He's using it as an opportunity to further erode the relationship between a population and its experts. Because as a dictator, you cannot have any other sources of truth. It can't be allowed. You have to be the source from which all truth flows. Even if you eventually allow other people to speak sort of independently, but still with your, you know, still in ways that you approve of, right? There's still a secret police out there that's going to grab people off the street, but you'll allow them to speak sort of semi-autonomously, but it's with the understanding that they are speaking with your voice. And fucking, what do the Catholics call it? Ex cathedra, right? From the seat. When the Pope speaks in a certain context, he's speaking literally with the voice of God.
I think you said the secret segue word.
The last thing that I would say about coronavirus is that there's hope, and that part of that hope is in the fact that we have all held strong, and eventually us and just the cold, hard reality of what's happening out there has started to break down some of these structures of lies that Trump, at the very least, has built up. And it looks like Bolsonaro is about to suffer a very similar fate, having actually contracted the virus himself, but his population is also very unhappy with him because of the way that he's responded to the virus. So there is hope there because there has been some improvement. There has been less improvement in other areas.
And now we will jump back a few weeks to when the George Floyd riots started and the protests. I know, I shouldn't say riots first. The protests started, that some of them turned into riots. And the president, all of a sudden, they're in Washington, D.C., and I believe that I remember us discussing this, that Washington, D.C. is not a state or something. You know, well, I know it's not a state, but anyway, there are more federal powers. So when there were miscellaneous shock troops that showed up without any kind of insignias on the streets of Washington, D.C., going in, we later found out that I think that they were mainly federal prison officials that were doing policing. We went, huh, that seems weird. Well, as of late, it seems like they've shown up in Portland, which is a part of Oregon, which is a state in the United States. And they have been rounding up protesters and throwing them in unmarked rented vehicles. So Dr. Sean Hayes, PhD, I keep calling them brown shirts. That might not be the preferred nomenclature, but how would you speak on that?
Sure. So, first of all, you're right. They are brown shirts. They are the shock troops being wielded by a budding dictator who also happens to be a white supremacist. So brown shirts is extremely appropriate. And by the way, this to the degree that this information that there is misinformation out there, it's being intentionally promulgated by the Trump administration. This isn't a misunderstanding on the part of the press or the public. This first became noticed in Portland, right? We are now talking about, and the president has threatened to spread this to other cities.
All my friends in Chicago that are listening, guess what? You're next.
Yeah. There has been some effort to sort of conflate this, to confuse this with certain cooperative efforts between federal and local law enforcement that have been ongoing for some time now, like in cities like Kansas City, for example. The reason why I ended up reading about Kansas City, by the way, is because our Attorney General, William Barr, a scum-sucking piece of toady filth, he had a press conference to try and defend all of this, and he claimed that they had already arrested 200 people in Kansas City. Right, now that is terrifying.
Yeah.
It's also a blatant lie.
Yeah.
So there has been a cooperative effort ongoing since December of 2019. Between federal law enforcement, so the FBI, the ATF, and one other, U.S. Marshals, and local law enforcement in Kansas City. It was called Operation something or other. I can't remember what it is. They're now referring to the whole overarching thing as Operation Legend, referring to a young boy who was shot and killed, unfortunately, in Kansas City. Something, by the way, that happens all too often in urban centers, in part because of the proliferation of guns in this country. But all of a sudden now, these old crusty white dudes give a shit about it. Gee, wonder why.
For fucking real, man. I mean, yeah. I lived in Chicago for years, and now all of a sudden, now that there are riots and shit, all of a sudden people are really upset about all the violence in the south side of Chicago.
Yeah.
Dude, that shit's been going on for a long time. Has it escalated recently? Yeah, it has. The murder rate has gone up. Was it fucking something you were striving for 4 years ago, 6 years ago when I was living there? No, no, it wasn't. It wasn't great then. Has it gotten worse? Yes. Is it going the wrong direction? Yes. But all of a sudden you guys want to pop up and be like, oh, we need to do something. They're killing kids on the south side of Chicago. Yeah, they've been dying for a long fucking time.
Well, and there's some other qualifying information that needs to be added to all of that. First of all, to the degree that we're seeing an increase in violent crime, it's all in terms of trends, statistical trends. There have been no actual records broken, and we don't actually know that any will be, right? They're just predicting, and we're not entirely sure who they is at this point. They may actually be some agencies related to federal law enforcement. So the only source of truth, in quotes, we have about whether there is in fact a surge in crime rates is the same group that would benefit from us believing there had been a surge in crime rates. But let's take it on face that there has been an increase. Even the increase they're talking about is still relatively minor. And even if you factored it in, violent crime is still down overall. The other thing you need to add is that it's not just in liberal cities that it's going up, even though that's what the president and his attorney general said during their press conferences today. And that's why it's only liberal cities that are being targeted by these unidentified federal shock troops. Jacksonville, for those of you who aren't familiar, Jacksonville is in Florida, and it is the host of this year's Republican convention, and its own sheriff has said they already have too many fucking problems on their hands. They really don't need this. It can't be done safely. And the GOP simply said, fucking suck it up. We're doing it anyway. Jacksonville also has seen a dramatic increase in violent crime, including murders. But there are no shock troops heading their way. Phoenix experiences a significant rate of violent crime every fucking year. Plenty of murders happen right here in good old sunny Phoenix, Arizona. Are there any federal shock troops on their way here?
I don't know. We do have a Democratic mayor for the city of Phoenix, so they might be on their way.
But we have a Republican governor, so they won't be on their way. you do see has been sufficiently obsequious that that R after his name still counts.
Oh, yeah, no, I mean, he is the puppet, but you think Ducey, if there was a way that Ducey could let shock troops into Phoenix, he wouldn't let them?
No, actually, I don't think he would. Think about who he was standing
in the way of what the president wanted to do?
Think about who lives here in Arizona, though, Mark. There's a certain line that they're not willing to let all of this go past, right? It's not just conservatives who live here. It's some really crazy fucking libertarians who live here in Arizona. What Arizona is known for isn't just like religious wacko conservatism. It's like the extreme far right of libertarianism, like blowing up weapons caches out in New River type libertarians. Do you really think those people are going to be down with the dooster letting the dumpster run a bunch of unidentified federal troops through our streets?
Ease up on the people in New River, all right? Some of them are good people.
I'm sure there are some very fine people on both sides, right?
I'm just saying there might be a picture that came up early in this podcast of me shooting a full auto Uzi in New River with somebody who was evidently a bomb maker. It happened a long time ago. I was 9 years old. I'm much older than 9 years old. But yeah, there have been some recollections that have been passed. And yeah, anyway, yes, no, it is true. This is the Old West. It is the modern Old West.
We're both a lot older than nine, but New River ain't changed that much, man. They've just pushed a little further north through Black Canyon country, right? It hasn't changed all that much. So I don't see it as likely that he willing. And, you know, for that matter, we haven't had as significant an issue. It would be harder to justify it here, right? Because we haven't had any significant violent protests, or rather the protests we have had, because we have had ongoing protests here, have not resulted in significant levels of violence or property damage.
Don't forget the war of Fashion Square Mall.
Yeah. And while we still have, you know, we have the crime rate of most major metropolitan areas, there have been no major news stories about a spike in violent crime here in Phoenix, right? So it would be harder to get away with. They have had some allies in the press to help promulgate these stories about a supposed increase in violent crime. I'm not entirely sure I buy that that is actually happening. And even if it is, it's not happening as a result of, as the Trump administration would like you to believe, the protests and the movement to defund the police, blah, 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 blah. If anything, it is a result of a country that is growing increasingly desperate as a massive, as a deadly virus rages out of control and our economy spirals further and further into the shitter. That's the kind of shit that creates civil unrest under any circumstance. Add to that the actions of law enforcement, right? Remember, this all started with the murder, the blatant murder of an innocent man. Well, an unarmed man, anyway. He may have been guilty of trying to pass a counterfeit $20 bill, possibly. But the murder of an unarmed and certainly not guilty of a crime worthy of the death penalty man by a police officer in Minneapolis, Derek Chauvin. Add to that the actions of law enforcement around this country, and then add to that leadership that is so hopelessly inept and self-serving and bigoted that it cannot get out of its own way. And yeah, you have a recipe for an increase in civil unrest, an increase in crime. People are angry, they're pent up, they're frustrated, they're desperate. The money is starting to run out. In 2 weeks, we're going to lose the unemployment extent. Less than 2 weeks, we'll lose the increased unemployment. Because as Mitch McConnell, the Senate leader, indicated today, there's not a chance in hell that they actually get a bill passed by the 31st of July. We'll have to do another episode another time about that one, because that really deserves its own conversation.
By the way, a bill has already been passed in the House for weeks to extend that. But
yes,
the Republicans in the Senate have decided that they don't want the people to get $600. And I mean, like, yeah, you're right. We should cover this more in a longer form later, because I do also see where getting more money on unemployment than you were in your normal job. But also, if you're an employer who was paying people less than what they're making on unemployment, maybe you should look at your job skill. Yeah, you should look at your pay structure, because maybe you're part of the problem as well. I mean, I understand. Guess what? I work in the brewing industry. It doesn't pay well, so I don't really want to shit everywhere that I eat, and I'm hoping to eat later. But, you know, it could. Maybe you should take a look at the books.
Yeah. Look, there's all sorts of things we can do to rectify that problem. The people currently in power are not the ones who are going to do those things, at least not in the Senate and not in the White House.
I would say not in the executive, yeah, or the Senate. Yeah.
So, and that's the fucking the even crazier part, is that most of the Senate actually wants to get that bill out the door.
Of course they do. Like, it's not just people in blue states. And this is another thing that I would like to reference, that we don't, that there's not red states and blue states. I was discussing this earlier. We live in a red country with giant blue blobs. It's not that all the blue blobs are only, you know, in red states. No, there are blue blobs everywhere. And those people's votes matter. And those people, I don't know, may work in the service industry. They may work in the hospitality industry. And they are fucked right now. And they need money. And so those people vote too. So I'm sure that, yes, there are plenty of people in the Senate who would love to vote and just get their reelection kind of sewn in, because they're really helping. They're actually helping. I'm sure that Martha McSally would really like to help at least a little bit, if only to keep her job.
Yeah, and the people who are obstructing this are, there's two groups of people. There are extremists, true believers, like Rand Paul, right? even though it's difficult to call that fucktard a true believer, right? Because he compromises his own principles so often. But there is no chance that he ever successfully runs for president. He knows it, right? So this is... he genuinely believes what he's saying when he opposes the extension of the unemployment increase. The other group, right, and he's representative of a small group of senators. The other group is equally small, and it is people who have never believed a word that came out of their own mouths, but are posturing for 2024 for presidential runs. So it's Ted Cruz versus Tom Cotton. Both of whom have been taking more and more extreme stances. Ted Cruz is getting more extremely, is moving towards a more extreme traditional conservatism. Tom Cotton is moving towards a more extreme populism, but a conservative flavor of populism, the fascist populism as opposed to the socialist populism. And they're going at each other right now. They're sort of the primary sticking point, is their fight that they're having over how this bill should look. But they represent a minority even of Republicans. And yet they are capable of bringing the entire process to a grinding halt, because Mitch McConnell has declared, because he wants to remain in power as long as he possibly can, that he will never do anything that he doesn't have consensus for in his caucus. And so because these two fucking retards are screaming at each other, there is no chance that supplemental aid gets passed before the 31st, which is when the unemployment benefits expire. So you have a lot of senators right now who are looking around going, what the fuck have you done to me? I'm in a competitive race. Susan Collins is going, holy shit, what the fuck have you done to me? Right? Martha McSally is looking at him going, oh my God, what are you doing? People in my state are going to start to run out of money right as I'm asking them to vote for me. And it's going to happen because of other members of the GOP. And they're losing their shit about it. So the entire caucus is coming unglued at this point. Right when we need them to just remain marginally coherent enough to pass a new aid bill. And they can't even manage that. And somehow that's not the scariest thing happening in our country right now. Portland is.
Right. Two things. We don't use the R word anymore. We call them TikToks. And so back to the brown shirts.
All right. So back to the brown shirts. So here's one thing, one distinction I want to make. So like the operation in Kansas City is representative of operations that happen all around the country, collaboration between federal and local law enforcement. And it is made up of traditional federal law enforcement agencies. That's why I made a point of pointing out earlier that it was FBI, it was ATF, it was U.S. Marshals, right? These are agencies that have traditionally been tasked with a law enforcement role. They have served warrants. They have cuffed suspects. They have read them their rights. They know how these things go. That's not who's in Portland. In Portland, we have a combination of thugs pulled out of the CBP, the Customs and Border Patrol Agency, and sort of the most thuggish members of the Federal Protection Service, right, which is a federal agency that provides security mostly for like monuments and important federal buildings like federal courthouses, et cetera. So like if you walk into the federal court, the people that are examining you and searching you, they're members of the Federal Protective Service. So these groups, the Federal Protective Service, less than the CBP, are not law enforcement agencies. The Customs and Border Patrol enforces a subsection of civil law, not criminal law. They're not charged with that. They don't normally deal with it. And what's more important is the courts over the recent years have staked out a position where if you're dealing with non-citizens and it's a situation involving civil law, the restrictions on what you can and cannot do are more relaxed. So this particular agency's thugs have been able, over the course of the last 4 years, to engage in increasingly violent tactics down on the border. So the importance of that is that they have been training down by the border for the role they're now fulfilling. Right? They are applying those same relaxed views about civil rights and human rights that they apply down at the border that the courts have allowed them to get away with. They're applying those in Portland. And they are doing so at the direct order of the President of the United States. You can't call him the Commander-in-Chief in this context because these are not military units. Right? He's only the Commander-in-Chief of the military, not of the country.
And I would like to make it known that I do have friends at the protests in Portland, and that these are not just, they are not sticking to federal grounds. They are not staying on federal land. They are moving off of federal land and working with local law enforcement. Guess what? You don't have reservation cops busting you in Scottsdale.
Look, it would be bad enough if they were doing this just adjacent to the federal courthouse, right? If they were firing rubber bullets and tear gas canisters at peaceful protesters, which is what we've seen them doing. But they were doing it just around the courthouse. And these protesters kept coming back to the courthouse. And it's like, all right, I don't agree with what they're doing, but I understand the dynamic that's going on there. They are trying to tell these people to go away, and these people are not going away. This conflict is going to continue. That's not what's happening here. They are going all around the city of Portland. And very often they are wearing no insignia of any kind, not even just the generic police across their chest, which is what we've seen on them in some of the photos. And they are driving around in rented, unmarked vans and snatching people off the street. Not people who are engaged in violence, not people who are engaged in looting. Almost seemingly random participants in peaceful protests are being snatched off the street and held in unmarked vans for hours at a time, never being informed they're being held before they are subsequently cut loose. They are also engaging in increasingly violent tactics. They continuously wear either a gas mask or a balaclava. They will not reveal their faces. They are typically wearing no insignia at all, but very often they are wearing military gear. So it looks as if soldiers are carrying this out, when in fact it is not the case. This is exactly what you see dictators do when they are looking to intimidate a population and bring them to heel. This has to be stopped. Thankfully, the authorities in Oregon seem like they are going to move to try and bring it under control. A new candidate for a guy who needs to start wearing a vest, who granted he probably already wears one, given his job. I want to make sure I get it correct. He is the district attorney of the city of Philadelphia, and his name is District Attorney Larry Krasner. who has said under no uncertain, in no uncertain terms, federal law enforcement agents who break the law in the city of Philadelphia will be subject to prosecution by his office. And that includes abducting people, right? Because he considers that kidnapping, if you are not wearing insignia, you do not have a warrant, you never display a badge, your vehicle has no insignia on it, you don't charge the people, you don't interrogate them, you don't identify yourself, you have no probable cause, that's not law enforcement, that's kidnapping. And he will prosecute them for it. That's a guy who, I guarantee you, he already wears a vest because he's the district attorney of the city of Philadelphia, but if he doesn't, he needs to start because there is definitely a target on his back. The motherfucker is a hero.
I wish he would start working in Kentucky because Breonna Taylor's killers are still wandering around.
Yep, absolutely. And like, to his credit, right, this dude's talking about, like, he's talking about how his agency is currently investigating misuses of pepper spray and CS gas, right, let alone the murder of citizens of the city of Philadelphia. Now, I'm sure Larry Krasner does not have a perfect record, right, in terms of punishing police officers for abusing people in Philly. It's goddamn Philly. I guarantee you their cops abuse people, right? Like, that's the joke about Philadelphia. He's a hell of a lot better than most. That's for goddamn sure. So there are, and you know, authorities in Illinois and Chicago, and you know, Chicago inside of Illinois, right? I am aware Chicago and Illinois are Chicago is in Illinois.
Although we feel it should be its own state.
Yeah. The governor of Maryland, the mayor of Baltimore, they have all basically said the same thing. We don't want them here. We're not going to allow them to operate freely here. So they will not be engaging in the same tactics in our city. I'm not entirely sure what stopping that looks like.
Right.
They absolutely would have the authority to order local police to place themselves between these federal thugs and protesters. That would absolutely be an appropriate use of local law enforcement officers. And I do believe that most of those officers would actually fulfill their oaths and follow those orders. And in so doing, could avoid a situation that might eventually lead to a civil war. Right? Because at that point, the federal officers, like most bullies, are going to back down. They're not going to open fire on local law enforcement. And once they back down, the protesters will then move away. And we can avoid this devolving into a situation where we have cops, local cops, shooting at federal cops, because that turns into civil war.
Word.
I think that there are hopeful signs that the local authorities are simply saying no. Even in Portland and Oregon, where it's already happening, they have filed lawsuits in federal court to try and bring an end to it. I think they will most likely be successful, but if they are not, we all need to remain vigilant. And if you are not well-armed, you should be.
And speaking of bringing an end to it, I believe we're going to bring an end to this podcast.
Yeah, because we have no concept of what short means. Mostly me, not you.
Whatever, we get there. I know you had a great time. Go ahead and hit subscribe however you figured out you were listening to this. I'm sure that just like the little app that you're listening right now, there's going to be a little thing. It probably has like three dots. Hit the three dots, and there's going to be like a little subscribe thing. Just go ahead and click that button. If you want to interact with the show, you can do so at Plastic Cup Pod. Reggie, I heard your question. We're going to get to the next episode because we don't understand what a short episode means. So we will get to that. And we're going to talk about schools some more because I'm sure there's going to be a lot more stuff to talk about with schools. Yep. And there was one thing that I really wanted to get back to and touch on, which is when we were talking about the violence in Chicago and about how it's always been going on. And I think that we do need to just real quick saying that these crime rates are high and they're going, that's just kind of the way that it is, also sounds crass in the way that people saying that the COVID death rate is, we're just going to have to deal with that. Like, just saying that we're going to have to deal with these violence rates doesn't sound much better than saying we're going to have to deal with COVID rates.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you. That's not what I intended to say. So one of the reasons that I pointed out that violent crime overall still remains down and dramatically down from the peaks we saw in the 70s and 80s is because of ongoing efforts, both on the part of law enforcement and the justice system, but also on the part of all sorts of different areas of society to reduce sort of the root causes of criminal behavior. We absolutely don't have to live with high levels of crime. We are not currently living with high levels of crime. They are, in fact, at historic lows. And we should continue to reduce them more. But we don't need federal shock troops on the streets to reduce violent crime. They are, in fact, increasing violent crime because they are committing violent crimes. It is a crime to violate the civil and human rights of an American citizen.
And because I know that Dr. Sean Hayes is a giant fan of the Doug Benson podcast, Doug Loves Movies, I would like to end this with Rand Paul is a shithead. Thank you. Good night. Whoa, 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 whoa. It's just a night.